Welcome to Raising Connections. I'm your host, Rayshan Mayer. This is the program where we talk about your critters, companions, commerce, and agriculture, and all of the connections between them. This morning, as always, we have a fun and interesting guest, Tim Barkley. Welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us who you are and how you're part of our community.
In 1995, I was kind of a newly minted lawyer. I'd been practicing for a few years down in Columbia, but wanted to find an office, and a friend of mine knew of a vacant office in Mount Airy. I knew of Mount Airy from growing up in central Maryland, but had never been around a whole lot. The office was available. I rented the office, and as they say, the rest is history, and that's been 30 years ago.
And it's the same office.
No, it's not.
Oh, no.
No, that office was on the first floor of what is now Long & Foster's office.
Okay.
And I was there for a few years, and then the second floor of that building became available, and I took over most of the second floor and built it out. It had my pride of joy custom milled French doors across the hall from each other, from the conference room to the waiting area. And then when that building sold, I moved into the what is now the financial planning office over top of Subway. Was there for a few years, and when the economic downturn hit, I went into the basement of what is now the Green Turtle.
Okay.
And then from there, moved to where I am now at One Park Avenue in Mount Airy.
You're very well versed in how the economic affects business, commercial real estate, building things out, and guiding people through transitions.
That's my thing, yes.
That is your thing.
Yeah.
You've really made a niche for yourself in the community, helping people with putting businesses together, doing estate planning ahead, and navigating those rough parts, those white waters of life, if you will. Is that what you set out to do?
I set out to help people be a good steward of what they had been given. We're entrusted with things, and we're called to be good stewards of them. And so that was my goal, and I've focused on that throughout my career.
In being a lawyer, what has been the part that has given you the most pride and joy?
I think there are two pieces of the puzzle. I realized early on that I am a teaching businessman. I want people to understand, and I want people to take control of their own lives. I used to teach, and I used to say I taught for the light bulb.
Okay.
When you see that light bulb pop in somebody's eyes, I do the same thing in my estate planning consultations and other things. I want people to get it. I want people to understand. I don't just say, trust me, I'm a lawyer. A, because that convulses people, and B, because it doesn't work in this culture. You can get everything for free on the internet, so why should they listen to me? So I teach. Second thing that really gives me satisfaction is in the sense of relief that I can help people achieve when they have taken this big amorphous kind of scary thing called their estate planning or providing for their children or taking care of their family after they're gone and make it into something that is a cohesive whole that's going to provide responsibly for those that they've been entrusted with.
When you say estate planning, some people's ears, I'm sure, perk up and say, oh, yes, I have farms, I have multi-generational properties, I have multi-generational businesses, and those ears may perk up. But then you also said things such as provide when I'm gone, perhaps provide for my burial, provide for that transition.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do both types of services?
Yeah, my primary client base is just ordinary people.
There's a lot of ordinary people.
Yeah, not a lot of normal people, but a lot of ordinary people. There's no minimum or maximum in my business. I have turned down a few clients who were in the $45 million range because that was just more than I was comfortable handling. For the most part, for the people that I run into, I want to help ordinary folks take care of their ordinary families and their ordinary lives. And if their ordinary life happens to have a business or a farm or some other challenge, special needs planning for special needs children or for a spouse with dementia. You ask what gives me joy. It gives me great joy to help folks plan for those difficult situations where they're caring for those who can't care for themselves. And it's not just a child who's 3 and then 15 years is going to be an adult. This is maybe a child who's 43 and will never be able to care for him or herself. So I take great delight in being able to help folks kind of lay those burdens aside in terms of the planning and focus on being able to be a caregiver.
When do you find is the best time to start planning? Is it at the wedding? Is it at the graduation? Is it at the birth? Is it, New Year's resolution? Is it?
Well, you know, don't do what my wife and I did. We signed our wills and powers of attorney after the wedding and before the throwing of the birdseed.
Oh, there we go, right in the middle.
Because I was working for a law firm and they gave us wills and powers of attorney for our wedding gift. And so we had to sign them and have them notarized, of course. But don't do that. I tell folks there are watershed points. There's one when you buy your first house, and then you start thinking about what's going to happen if we both die. A bigger one is when we have our first kid. Now we have to really start adulting because there's somebody dependent on us. A mortality point is when people retire and they suddenly realize that they just hit the peak of their income and they need to start planning for what they have and thinking about trust for their children. Usually by that point, the kids are grown and starting to leave the house, finishing college. And so there's less thinking about providing for young children and more thinking about providing for their own future. And then another is somewhere in the 75, 80-year-old range when people start to realize that suddenly they start counting and find out that more than half of the people they went to high school with have already gone the way of all flesh. And so they are now hit with the fact that that's them. And it could be in the near term or the long term. We talked before the show about COVID. One of the things that COVID did with people is made them realize that you may not need to wait till you're 80 to address your own mortality. So we were blessed to be able to assist folks who were much younger than the usual age bracket for folks contemplating their own mortality to do something about it before it's too late. People sit in my office and say, if something happens to me, and I say, no, ma'am, ain't no if. It's when, where, and what, but it's not if.
Absolutely. So we talked about building up as watershed moments. What about the breaking down of watershed moments? For example, if there is a divorce, if there is an accident, you can't plan for tragedy. Tragedies happen. But is that another watershed moment?
Yes. I talk to a fair number of folks who are coming out of a divorce, coming out of a death of a spouse, coming out of a tragic situation, and helping them to either adjust what they'd already planned or plan for their new reality. There's also a sense of urgency sometimes, especially with divorces, because if you're in the middle of a divorce and your power of attorney and medical directive still name the person who's about to be your ex-spouse as the decision maker for you, that can be tragic. So I encourage folks to come visit with me just so we can get some basic documents in place and name somebody else.
That makes sense.
Once the divorce is final, that takes care of itself in a certain way, because the law says that a divorce revokes nominations under power of attorney and nominations of executor and beneficiary status under wills. But if you're in the middle of that process, it can sometimes be a grueling process over many years. There is no legal standard that's going to save the situation for you if you don't make provision for it yourself.
If you were going to counsel our listeners or give our listeners a piece of advice, when would you advise them to seek the counsel to start planning for the future?
I think as soon as they realize they're adults, which depends on the situation. Women realize that much earlier than men in this culture.
I was always told it wasn't when you could smoke, drink, or buy lottery cards. It was when you started dealing with health insurance.
There you go. When you start having more health insurance cards in your wallet.
There you go.
Cards. But yeah, I think folks need to start, if they haven't already started talking about it and thinking about it, it's when they start having people dependent on them for their support and sustenance. Folks need to realize that in Maryland, the only way to name a guardian for your little child is in your will. So if you have something that you wrote down that says, if we don't come back from this trip, we want the kids to go to my sister Sally, that's nice, but that doesn't have the binding effect of a guardianship provision in a will. And probably best not to call your lawyer the day before you leave for your vacation to see if he can have something for you to sign at 6 a.m. the next morning.
Does that really happen?
That happened to me about a month ago.
Oh, my goodness.
I said no. Sorry.
Oh, my goodness. So. In our area, one of the populations that we host are people that travel for work and one spouse is home, one spouse is on the road. Or within our own family, both spouses can be in roads on separate states and the kids are in a third state. And boy, the thought of having an accident is scary.
Yeah, I have clients where the husband leaves the house and drives 270 and the wife leaves the house and drives 70 into Baltimore. And that's an everyday thing. The scariest place you'll ever go is Route 270. It's not the airports, it's not the airlines, it's not the cruise, it's driving 270 or driving the Baltimore Beltway. Yeah, this is something not to be taken lightly, because I do talk to folks that the unthinkable has happened and now they're kind of stuck in a situation they didn't want to be in.
Do you find that when those unthinkable situations happen, that folks maybe haven't done the planning, but they've done some emergency situations? Well, here's what I'm thinking. In our area, we have several folks, and in any area, I think this is true, who are living by themselves for whatever reason. They are solo in their life. Their partner or their spouse, or they've chosen not to have a partner or spouse, is not in the picture. And who are those emergency contacts? If you don't have parents or you don't have children, what the heck do you do with that?
And that's a big issue in our culture since about the baby boomers had fewer and fewer children, had more and more divorces. It's a growing phenomenon of folks that don't have anybody. They're in their 70s or 80s. They never had children, or they had children, but their children are estranged, or their children are just gone and they haven't seen their kids in 15 or 20 years. Their kids live very far away. They have no surviving spouse, or they never had a spouse. Their parents are gone, and they just have nobody. And I talk to people, it's like, and then they ask me, will you be my, you know, medical decision maker? Because I just don't have anybody else. And they, no, I'm sorry, that's not appropriate. They'll ask me if I'll be their executor and power of attorney. And I tell them I can do that legally, but in my family situation with my own parents to care for and my own situation, I really can't commit to that. So they're struggling with that. That's really sad because these folks really don't have a support network.
So do you think that speaks to community? Do you think that speaks to family? Does it speak to a religious life, to a community life? How are people filling this gap?
Well, for some folks, it's nice if they have plugged into the local community and they have very close friendships. But along with the loss of the family support structures, we also have a loss of stability in the community. People have moved around, so people have no roots. They just happened to land here because this was the last job they had. And now they don't want to move again, or they can't because they're not physically able. And there's just nobody in the community that they know well enough to ask, would you pay my bills for me if I can't pay them for myself? And it's scary to have a stranger, somebody you don't know, stepping in to provide for those needs. It's even worse on the medical side, because if you don't have anybody and you're unable to care for yourself, then the county sends an ombudsman, somebody to come in and actually provide those services. And now you have possibly the very good-hearted, but very overtaxed and overworked person from the Department of Social Services coming in to check on you once a month, and they're providing for your medical care. So there's not a lot that people can do at this late stage in the game, except to think really hard and seek out resources. But for those who can think about the way they're living their life and maybe make some provision, think about what's going to happen when they get older, this will be a good time to cultivate some relationships.
When we come back, let's talk about those multi-generational relationships and setting ourselves up for success.
Thank you.